it, but it doesn't really fit. She just doesn't matter. You know, all your records are like that. You know, nothing fits. Just put it out there, you know. So I said, oh, okay, you got a point there.
And your wife knows, because you guys been married a long time, I know, right?
Yeah. So, it's all, like, when I'm at home here, like, the stuff I play at home and I practice a lot of classical music because I was, you know, years ago when I came out of college, actually what I wanted to do is join the Philadelphia Orchestra. I was going to be one of the first African-American musicians in there. Mm-hmm. And I was practicing, getting it together. I had it all together. And then I met Chick Corea, and Chick talked me out of it. He said, well, you know, there's Bach and Beethoven, but there's Clark and Corea. that sounds good. Fine. Okay. Yeah.
And that's history right there, for real.
Man, yeah.
You are, Stanley, this is not our first spotlight on you over the years. And, you know, it's just surreal almost talking to you, you know, even though I've interviewed you before and all these other people. But I just, you know, you just so much remind me and the others out there that are your fans of the growing up days, the early days, you know, back in the heyday, the 70s. And,
oh, yeah.
And those, you know, those feel good times. Is that what people say when they hear you in performance, et cetera, that you bring back good memories?
Yeah, because, you know, what we do with the band that's unique is it's a big party, but it's a big party with people that play their instruments really well. We don't really, you see when you see the band, no one really takes themselves really serious, but the guys play really, they've practiced their instruments really seriously, you know. Like, I have this band I have is all young players, and they're all like super, super virtuosos. For some reason, I just like to be with musicians like that. They can play anything I give them to play. These people play. They have understanding of language. I mean, we do everything from in our encores. We do Parliament Funkadelic, then we'll, like, a Return to Forever Peace. We'll do something from some of my albums and all that. But people really, like, walk away, like feeling great, you know, and that's the thing that I stress and all the groups that I have.
Well, I know for them, you know, it has to be unbelievable experience for them to be the age they are and work with somebody at, you know, your status in this music. I mean, that's got to be the ultimate gas for them. Come on, you know.
Well, yeah, it's a cool thing because, you know, when I started playing with the older fellows, the older jazz musicians, I mean, when I came on the scene, I was like 17, 18, 19, and, you know, and I was very fortunate that these guys were very, you know, cool with me. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I remember the most about those guys is they passed down things to me that they learned from guys they worked with, that, you know, way back. And that's one of the cool things about instrumental music, in particular jazz, is what really keeps the music going is it gets passed down, whether it's passed down person to person or through education. They're probably the main two places that it gets passed down. It just, that's what keeps it really, really keeps it alive. I mean, there's so many young musicians out there. It's funny, you know, I'm not sure whether you're familiar, you probably are familiar with Kamasi Washington.
Yes, most definitely.
And Kamasi and his crew, the West Coast Get Down, they were guys I've known since they were like 14, 15 years old. He's come by the house, and I've been telling people about them for a long time. And you know, many of those guys have been in my groups, and so it's nice to see them, you know, come up and get out there. But there's a whole layer of young musicians that are out there that are just waiting for somebody to come along and help them, but more importantly, educate them. Because, you know, that's one of the problems with society today. I mean, if I mean, there's a lot of good things out there, but if you look at some of the things that aren't so good, at the root is miseducation, no education, and so forth. You know?
Well, and that plus, you know, not having music in the schools and et cetera, you know, giving the student, young people opportunity to, that are so inclined or to lean to instruments, you know, because that really has helped a lot of people through, you know, their self-esteem as well as their love of school.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, when you mentioned the 70s, you know, I think of, you know, the 60s, like in schools. I mean, you know, all the schools had great programs back then, and in the 70s they had great programs, and, you know, they started cutting these programs out of schools, and I truly believe that, a society, I mean, any environment that you have, you know, where you have people and kids, if you take the art out, you know, it does something. It brings it down, because I think that the guys that cut those programs out, maybe they were thinking that, like, everyone has to, you know, go out and be the next Michael Jackson or the next Miles Davis. But that's not why you have music in school. That's not why you have art. Because, see, art, music, whether it's literature, music, or painting, or whatever, it keeps people, you know, it just keeps their heads right. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. It's hard to talk about it. It enriches people. It's because in the old days, I mean, if you go back, you know, whether you go back to Africa or the early parts of this country or any country, music was just something you had in the house. People sang songs. Every culture, they have that. You know, when you're young, you know, in you know, whether it's church music, gospel music, you know, country music, you know, ethnic music when you go into Europe and all that sort of stuff. It's just something that makes life better. And when you get rid of that, the society becomes godless.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not good.
Well, and something else it does, too, you know, music has this power. You know, it can soothe the savage beast. You know, I mean, it can. It just brings a different atmosphere, or it ushers in emotions and feelings. And, you know, it's almost like a breath of air. And without it, I don't know what kind of world this would be. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, it would not be smooth here.
No, because, I mean, you know, if you think about it, and over these decades, you know, you've been around for quite a few musically, you know, it has been used to define eras, you know, movements, you know, war or civil rights or peace and love or whatever the case. You know, it's just been used to move people. And, you know, you being at the top level and around as long as you have, and still continue to be the bomb.
That's right.
Well, you know, it's a gift, man. You know, you're gifting us, you know, so we're eternally grateful that we have what you bring to the table to take us from one point to the other. Now, Stanley, when we were talking about the band, I didn't get you to name the guys. So tell us who they are.
Okay. So the band members are the piano player, a guy who plays acoustic piano. He's 22 years old. His name is Becca Gochishvili. He has an interesting story. Actually, Condoleezza Rice found him. He was in the country of Georgia. He was like 12 or 13 years old, and she made it possible for him. I mean, whatever you think about her politics, she did a good thing here. She made it possible for him to come to America and sent him to Juilliard. Graduated from Juilliard at like 16 or 17. He started playing with me at 16. Now he's 22, and he's one of these genius guys. Anyway, he plays piano. He's in the band. I have a guy from Afghanistan who's playing tabla. His name is Salar Nadar, and he's in his 30s. He's a tabla master. He's like, he's just one of these guys. Is just a master. have the newest member to the band that I think is the most shocking young violinist that's out here now. I mean, come to the show just to hear him. He's been studying with Jean-Luc Ponty for a long time. Jean-Luc told me about him when he was 12. Mm-hmm. When Evan was 12. So now Evan is in his 20s, and he is amazing. I'm really, really proud of this guy. So he's playing. And then one of the West Coast Get Down guys that plays with Kamasi, his name is Cameron Graves, is playing keyboards, the other keyboard player. Then we have a drummer in his 20s named Sharik Tucker. And the band is really, they're young guys. They're just trying to keep up with me, you know. So, you know.
I love that. Okay, for real. They are trying to keep up with him. See, y'all didn't hear that. That's how you do it, Stanley. That's how you do it. Now, I'm
that's
just
right,
saying.
That's right.
Now, do they ever share, like, I'm sure that on the first day or whenever it was, they had to be like, oh, Lord, thank you. I'm with Stanley Clarke. Oh, my God. I mean, they had to, have that moment, Have they ever shared that thought with you, or are they just trying to be hard all the time?
No, it's funny. When you have our group, when you come to the show, you'll see that everybody's very happy with it. I that's the way I like to run my ship like that. That's everyone, that's part of it. Being a leader, it's chemistry. You have to factor that in. You have to make sure you have people that are cool, And these guys, you know what happens when you have a family? We do like probably close to 80 concerts a year.
Uh-huh.
And when you're together that much, there's a lot of communication happens because
sure.
Helping each other with this, and I try to help these guys as much as I possibly can,
mm-hmm.
and in return they help me too, because it's just many things that I see that these guys do, things that I actually wouldn't think about because it's the youth, young players are always the ones that come up with the new kind of fresh ideas and things like that. It's a very cool thing. So our communication is really open, and they're very happy. I mean, to go out and play 80 concerts a year,
yeah.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah, no kidding.
Pretty good.
And to get the star treatment too. I mean, that's what's up.
Yeah. And they're all growing, and it's a great thing to see. So it's a great thing.
Well, that's cool because, I'm so happy that you cats, like you and others that, have reached that level, are encouraging to the next generation so our music doesn't have to go away like some people were predicting maybe 10, 15 years ago. That would be the end. Turn the lights off and shut the door. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, devil's a lie on that.
It will never, this music will never die.
Absolutely. Now, Stanley, how do you, as you've been through all these decades and, work with some of the, the creme de la creme, all y'all legends, when you are in your creative mode, are you trying to speak for keeping the music? Is it like a new phase, or is this just part of you? Are you saying that this is the progression in like your album out right now, The Message? What is the message?
Well, the message on that record is the oldest message there is, which mm-hmm. is love. That's it's funny. This record was done. We did it in Europe because we wrote the record in Europe because mm-hmm. we were over there and there was some terrorist stuff happening in the cities we were going to go to, and so we had to stay in Paris for about like a week.
Mm-hmm.
But I told the young guys rather than running around drinking wine, looking for hanging out with strange people. why don't we take a couple days and write some music, so which they did, and then we ended up doing our tracks in Brussels in Belgium, and then we mixed the record out here in California at my place. But it's to all the things that you said about are you thinking about the progression of the music going? Yes, it's all of the above. I mean, whenever I make music, whenever you get to a point where I'm at, you're definitely conscious of what's behind you. You have a lot of stuff behind you, so you have to be conscious of it. But at the same time, the type of person that I am, I'm always looking forward. I had great. I lived very close to Miles Davis when I New York, and I used to see him quite a bit. And he was one of those guys, always looking future, always going future. But he had a massive past behind him. So you're always conscious of what's behind you, where you're standing right at that moment, what you're going to do in the future. So it's a tremendous wealth of information that you're sitting with that you can move and grab things from and perpetuate things and send things into the future and place things in the future. Like I'm going to do this here and do that there, and it's really fun. I'm having a great time.
Well, I can tell because you sound like the ultimate laid back Lenny man. I mean, you just sound so, the coolest dude on the planet. That's how you sound. Okay.
I know my kids who aren't kids now, they always make fun of me. Man, why do you always sound so cool? I can't help it. I said, you guys want to hear me screaming or what? They go, no.
I don't know if you're capable or not. I mean, I just
can't. Oh, I can. Okay. Everybody can scream, Everybody can scream.
Now, Stanley, on a cut one, you have, let me remind the audience too, so they won't think I'm at my house just yakking. This is Jazzy 88's Artist of the Week on WFSK, our weekly get together. And this week we're highly favored, blessed and highly favored to put the light back on the Grammy Award winning legendary bassist, Stanley Clark. And, it just doesn't make any sense. He's such the bomb, okay? Anyway, having said that, cut number one, And You Know We're Missing You. Had to be something you wrote, right?
Yeah, that was an interesting piece. Like, it's funny. I have lots of friends in all different types of music, all genres of music. One of my really good friends is a rapper that's been around for ages, and he's known as the inventor of the beatbox. It was Dougie Fresh. So Dougie happened to come by the house. He was in California, so he came by. Me and my son were there, and so he walked in the pad, and we were hanging out. And we were talking about, like, all the people that had left us, like, the last 3 years, George Duke, Al Jarreau, Tom Petty, all these different artists that I knew, many more, too. And so, we went in the studio and we started messing around, and it was just, so the track is just me and Dougie. That's it. Dougie did the drums with his voice and everything else, and I just put the bass down and some background stuff, and that was it. It was just kind of a duet with me and Dougie Fresh, and it was just kind of us letting those guys know that we miss them.
And you said you got, Larry Coryell, that was a tough one, But your good friends, Larry Coryell and Daryl Brown. How far back with Larry Coryell did you go?
Me and Larry, we go back to, 71.
Wow.
71, 72. I mean, when I first time I went to New York, Larry was there. I've known Larry for a long time, been a friend and really a good guy. And his passing was just so sudden. It's funny when I experienced this with George Duke. George Duke was probably the hardest person for me to get over that.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't ever really get over it, but just to be able to function without thinking about it, or having it bother you, because I spent so much time with George. I met George in a hallway of a hotel in Finland in about 1971. And then we both came out the door at the same time. In those days, we had these humongous afros, and we were, it was a funny story, because we were coming down this hallway. It was a little tiny hotel, and literally we couldn't pass each other without our afros, like some afro burns or something, where, you know. And so George said, hey, you're Stanley Clark. I said, yeah. I said, you're George Duke. He says, because George was West Coast, I was on the East Coast. And so we met. And from that point, we stayed friends and really close up from that day to the very last day when he took his last breath, you know. So it was pretty interesting. Well, what I'm saying is that some guys, they have like a real invincible quality to them, like George. And you just, some people you know, and you just think, a guy's never going to die, you know. But George was, it's still surreal to me. I think. You know, sometimes I expect to hear or get a call from him, or, you know, it's wild.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, and then it impacted me. Like, I was like, I love him. I had never met him. But it was just so his music and, you know, what he brought to the scene. And, you know, he had been, I got a couple of archival interviews in here with him. And, you know, he always had something funny to say. You know, he'd be telling stories. I remember one of them, in one of the interviews, he was telling stories about, I was asking about his songs or something. And he was talking about, you know, his past life when he was cutting up. And
I was probably there.
And, you know, because I said, where you get these lyrics? You know, he was talking about, you know, old relationships. I'm like, okay, tell me more. I mean, so it was, you know, and he had it was just hilarious. So, you know, I'm going to have to unearth those and put them in line.
Yeah, he was one of the funniest guys you could ever meet. But he had a thing. George, like, was an unusual guy. He was like a Buddha, like a brown Buddha. Because you'd go to his house, I don't care who you were, and you'd go to his house, and a lot of people used to go to his house, and George had this big desk that he used to sit at and do his work and stuff like that. And so you'd come in there, and you'd see George. A lot of times, you know, I would just go over there. I'd just hung there, you know, with George a lot. George would come to my place. And once you hang out with George, whatever residue you had of the day, whatever you came in there with, any kind of negativity that you had, you left, and it was gone. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one of these guys that had that quality that would make you forget about, like, what was not so good in your life. Mm-hmm. So when we toured, it was so much fun. I almost felt like telling the promoters, keep the money. We don't just need it. this is all fun out here, man.
I can definitely see that.
I mean, we had the Clark Duke Project. We toured straight for about 4 or 5 years. Wow. I mean, I almost didn't come home.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. It was so much fun. And he was a special, nobody like him. Absolutely nobody.
It was not, and musically either. Right. Now, lastly, I know we're talking about the Stanley Clark Band and your latest release, The Message, but I must ask about SMV, because whenever I put that in, you know, people would call me and say, what's the name of that song? You know, the Thunder Cut. I was like, my God, the walls would shake up here. I'm like, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a hard. That group was one of these, like, groups. Only way I could tell you to put it in a few words is it came together by accident. There was a Bass Player magazine put together this. They were given a Lifetime Achievement Award to me, so they elected Victor Wooten and Marcus Miller to present it. So they presented me with this award, and they had all these basses on the stage, and they said, why don't you guys play something? So they all said, well, we all know School Days, so they all played, and it's actually online. It's on YouTube. It's got about 3-4 million views or something like that. And so we played it, and it was so easy. It was just drums, 3 basses, and a keyboard player. And we thought, wow, this is great. Mm-hmm. So what happened was Victor said, why don't we go out live and do something. And Marcus says, man, my schedule is like between touring and movies. And my thing was I was doing a ton of movies and touring and other things. I said, I don't know. So we found some spots to go out and tour. And unfortunately, we spent more time in Europe. Than in the States. I think we only did 10 shows in the States. But in Europe, it was so humongous. I mean, people were coming out. It was just, it was amazing. And so the good part of this story is that there's some talk of us getting back together again, like, you know, maybe the end of 2019. But it's a difficult thing because we're all, like, completely our touring things and the way we do our music stuff is in completely different direction as far as time and schedule is. And so it's just hard to put it together. But I tell you, the people with that, that's an exciting show. You put work in. When we do that, you get a chance to see. If you don't know what a bass is after you come to that show, you need to just go to the hospital, just admit yourself, and just, you know, stay there.
Well, you know, I said, when we played, when I used to put Thunder on, man, and I had the album version, and I can just feel the walls vibrating. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're the station that, National Jazz Station, we play it. You know, because some stations, oh, that's too hard. No, that's that's three fire basses, baby. That's what's up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the premier basses.
Oh, my God.
And, just, I mean, the Europeans, they played that thing like it was ice cream or something. They just played it to death. And when we went over there, they just went crazy. I think people here would just love it. They just, still this day, I run across people say, man, I just found this album. And I said, man, you know it's hard over here. I think, we're very formatted over here. And it just is what it is. But the good thing is with YouTube and the internet, you know, you can find things, you know, if you're looking for it. But that's a special album.
And of course, radio stations like this one, Stanley.
Yes.
That absolutely play your music, and we go against the grain. I know that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few out there. And you guys. I mean, I know all about you guys. And so, you know, that's. I mean, we love it. We musicians. We love it. We really, really appreciate what you guys do.
Well, you know, we have to stick our neck out. But I mean, this is like, you know, the music lovers. This is it. You know, this is. So I want the experience to be pleasant. Now, Stanley, you're coming to the city next week?
Yes.
Okay, you're at City Winery, I think, next Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Is this one night or two nights?
I think it's one night. We come and we're pretty much bouncing from city to city. So we come in and we're going to do it. I really highly recommend for anybody that wants to see something really exciting and leave with a smile on their face, they need to come down and check it out.
Definitely. Now, after this show is over, are you going to come out and, you know, or are you just going on? I mean, do people get to see you? I mean,
yeah. You know, what I'm going to do is sign autographs and sign some CDs and some things like that. And, I usually just come out and hang. I mean, I know a lot of people in many cities from years I've been touring. So, you know, I like to come out and hang with the people.
Well,
so.
Thank you, because without the people, y'all don't have no money.
That's right. And more important, no ears.
No
either.
Kidding. Right, exactly.
Imagine that.
Yeah, oh, Lord, that's horrible. Stanley, you are the best. And, you know, it's always just an absolute joy to chat with you and, you know, get the update. You know, it's just, you made my week, man. I'm telling you for real.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. And our folks that are still able to get the tickets at the City Winery, I think they're still available. Are course. All right. This is sold out. Well, y'all go and see.
Just come on out anyway. Just get in. You know, if you can't get a ticket, come to the backstage and call me.
Stanley. Hey, it's me. It's your boy from way back. It's your girl.
That's right.
The Stanley Clark Band. The Message is their new release, and just a superb opportunity to hear directly from the man himself, Stanley Clark. Stanley, so much. Thank you so much, and it's been a true, true blessing to get to talk to you. Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. Okay.
You're welcome, and you take good care. Bye bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Oh Lord, right now, just thank you. Oh my God, and that's not the first time I've interviewed him.